We want to spend the rest of the hour talking about violence in Kenya. Since the end of December, hundreds of people have been killed in riots there after an election that the opposition argues was stolen. A new round of riots broke out earlier today. We'll try to get an understanding of what happened and why. Ken Okoth is from Kenya. He grew up there and runs a school in Kibera. He managed to get his family out of the country. We'll tell you his story in a moment. But first, we want to go to Gwen Tompkins. She's NPR's Africa correspondent based in Nairobi, Kenya, and she's on the line from there. Gwen, thanks for staying to talk to us today.
Hi, Mike. Nice to be here.
Can you start with what happened today? New riots, what sparked them?
Well, today actually began with quite a lot of hope. In fact, one of the major newspapers here had a big headline saying, "The Glimmer of Hope." This was the day in which the president of Ghana, John Kufuor, was to arrive to begin a process of mediation between President Mwai Kibaki and the main challenger, Raila Odinga. Now, you know, the president and Mr. Odinga were in a very hot presidential race. And that race was called on December 30th, and it was called for Mr. Kibaki, the incumbent. It turned out that the results of the tally have been deemed dubious by many international observers as well as observers here, you know, domestic observers. So there's been quite a lot of violence that's been sparked by this announcement from December 30th, and that violence has pretty much continued up until this point. Now, there's been a lot of international interest in this race and in its outcome and in the violence that's taken place, which has killed, you know, some estimate 500 dead so far nationwide. Some estimates go as far as to say 1,000 are dead nationwide. And so the international community has been sitting on top of President Kibaki and Mr. Odinga to get them to move closer to the bargaining table. In fact, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Jendai Fraser has been here for the past 3 days talking with each leader separately and trying to move the process along. But, things looked pretty good for a while there because the president invited Mr. Odinga for talks on Friday at the presidential residence. Mr. Odinga, who had actually planned nationwide protests today, canceled those protests because he said he wanted to give mediation a chance. And then, you know, a big wrench, came into the situation when President Kibaki went on television today and announced, quite a few members of his cabinet, including the vice president, the minister of defense.
So he's forming a government despite all the talks that are supposed to happen.
That's right, because these talks that were supposed to begin on Friday were going to be about power sharing. Obviously, Mr. Odinga is quite upset about the election. He feels as if that election has been stolen from him. All of his supporters, I would probably say, believe that as well, and he's got quite a few supporters around this country. It was a very tight race. And so he, you know, from his vantage point, it looks as if a man who has stolen an election from him is moving that train along to go ahead and begin a government without him.
On the one hand saying we'll have talks, on the other hand saying, but here's what my government's going to be. But I need to ask you about the context, because so much of the violence has broken down on ethnic and tribal lines. Maybe the best way to ask you the question is, if 2 months ago I were to ask you, is Kenya just keeping a lid on what could be simmering tribal violence, would you say that it was?
Well, I think that the violence that's occurred has taken a lot of people by surprise, including many Kenyans. In some areas, it appears as if people were just very surprised by the result of the race and angry, and their burning and looting sort of stemmed directly from that. In other areas, particularly in western Kenya, it appears that there have been long simmering ethnic rivalries, ethnic resentments based on land issues that date back to, you know, Kenyan independence back in the early 60s, and that the election results simply triggered some expression of those resentments and a very ugly expression of those resentments.
And the last question I'll ask you before we let you go, Gwen, to do more reporting for NPR is, Today in the United States, Barack Obama, the presidential candidate, was supposed to have put in a call to the opposition leader urging him to stop the violence over there. Is that a known fact, and what was the reaction?
Well, the news sort of came amid a whole flush of news, you know what I mean, about the actual immediate issue at hand here. So, I mean, Mr. Obama's call was about 5 minutes long, from my understanding, mm-hmm. and in that call he urged Mr. Odinga, the challenger, to go to the bargaining table without preconditions. Now that the situation seems to have deteriorated, I don't know if Mr. Obama is going to be back in touch with the challenger, Mr. Odinga. Although I have heard that Mr. Obama is trying to contact President Mwai Kibaki by telephone.
All right, Gwen Tompkins, who joined us from her office in Nairobi. Thank you very much, Gwen.
Thank you so much, Mike.
And now let me turn to Ken Okoth, who's from Kenya. He grew up there, and he runs a school. Tell me a little bit about the school that you run in Kenya.
Well, thank you for having me. The
You're
school
welcome.
I run in Kenya is called the Red Rose School. It's in the Kibera slums of Nairobi, where we've had most of the violence in the city since the election results were announced. And we take care of 90 kids, many of them orphans, and a lot of them who are not orphans are still living in very vulnerable circumstances.
And the kids that you take care of, are they from both big tribes of Kenya?
They're from a number of tribes in Kenya, not just the two major tribes that you keep hearing about in the news. They're from all kinds of parts of Kenyan society.
And what is your tribe, and how strongly do you identify with it? I guess living here, probably not as much as when you live there.
No, not really. Actually, I grew up in Kibera, and we joke about it. The people in Kibera, we call ourselves chokoras, which means scavengers. We are left to scavenge whatever we can get in Nairobi, and that's our primary identity. The tribe just helps with the language and the music you might know. But the kids in Kibera who grow together, they speak multiple languages, and for the younger generation, it's not as important.
But you are which ethnicity?
I grew up in the Luo tribe. That's the ethnicity.
But the major identity was you're a kid from the slum.
A kid from the slum.
How'd you come here?
I was very fortunate to go to St. Lawrence University. They gave me a scholarship. After high school, I qualified to go to university, but I couldn't. So for 2 years, I worked as a security guard, and I worked delivering newspapers. I was a paper boy, and St. Lawrence had an office in Nairobi, and the paper boy one day asked the office, "Do you guys have a scholarship?"
That was you.
That
you
was
were the
me.
Paper boy.
Yep.
Yeah. And you just asked for a scholarship flat out?
I asked, "Do you guys have a scholarship?" And they said, "Come back one more time and speak to the person who's in charge of that." And I kept going back until eventually they gave me the information. I was very determined, and I found out, wow, there is a full scholarship. All I need is my ticket to go, and I'll get a job on campus and pay for my books. So St. Lawrence University changed my life.
And when you show up as a freshman in St. Lawrence, are you on equal footing as all these other kids, some of whom went to fancy American prep schools?
Well, I had to learn to speak a little differently, but very quickly, I actually was helping the kids to edit their papers, and I got a job as a writing tutor.
Okay.
So that was very interesting. When I spoke, people didn't always understand what I said, but when I wrote, I could help people write their papers and worked as a writing tutor.
How'd you come to be in charge of the orphanage in Nairobi, the slum in Nairobi?
I go back home every summer. I've been lucky. I've had the privilege of a great education. After St. Lawrence, I went to Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. I teach at the Potomac School, as good as it gets, a really great school. And every summer, being a teacher, I go home and I spend time with my family and I try to do something in the community. So I went to this school that was started by one of my old teachers when I was a little kid. This lady took care of me and was one of my teachers, and she had retired. She started the orphanage and the school to take care of AIDS orphans and other kids in Kibera. And I started helping them. And after 2 years of helping them, they were calling me for advice and to make decisions and to advise them how to run the place better. And that's how very quickly it became, "Ken, you're helping us the most. It's your school now."
And it's your school now.
Now it's my school, and people here say Ken's school, and back there it's Ken's school too. But it's really rewarding to do the work and to ask people for support. And I've got a lot of support, and I'm keeping asking for more support to help more kids.
What's the concern and the information coming out of your students and the people who work in your school there in Kenya in the slum of Kibera?
Well, we have mixed news. The very good news is, in all the violence that has turned most of Kibera into what looks like a war zone, there's parts that have remained undamaged, and the Red Rose School has not been touched. We have a caretaker who lives in a room at the school, and the school has not been touched. So we are concerned, on the other hand, for the families and the kids who we've been helping. We don't know where they are. It's very hard to track them. The cell phones are off, and you know, these people have lost everything they had, and the need is going to be much greater next week when the kids start coming back to school.
Do you think the school wasn't touched because of luck, because of respect for the school, or because maybe it wasn't a clear symbol of one tribe or another?
Yeah, it wasn't a clear symbol of one tribe or another. The people who work at the school are from all different ethnic communities, and the children who go to the school are from all different ethnic communities.
So if when you were growing up, if you just identified yourself as a slum kid and not so much a Luau, not so much a Kikuyu, how come, as after this presidential result was thrown into chaos, how come people quickly reverted to those types? Or maybe we're misunderstanding it from thousands of miles away.
I think there is misunderstanding. The violence in Nairobi, where I grew up, for instance, in Kibera, there's about 700,000 people to 1 million people. The people fighting out on the streets, wrecking havoc, looting, I would say are 10,000 people or less. You know, so you have people who are neighbors from one ethnic community to the next who are actually not attacking each other. But there's a lot of young people who are unemployed and who feel their only say in Kenya is to vote and to have a chance in the democracy. And they feel they cheated, and their leaders have not given them good guidance, and they have gone out to riot and to loot and to rape. And unfortunately, that's how it's happening. So the people attacking other people, it won't be my neighbors, you know. None of the neighbors we lived in from any different ethnic communities would deign to attack my family, and my family would never attack the neighbors we've lived in all these years.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ken, I wanted to ask you, hearing about it as you do here and seeing the news as it's portrayed here, are there any things that, in general, the news is getting right or wrong about the situation in Kenya that you, as an insider, could correct?
I would say more that the news is not covering is the stories of the regular people who are being affected by this crisis the most. We're not getting enough of that, and I'm very concerned. In a few weeks, this won't be on the headline, and they'll have to rebuild their lives. They have lost everything, and they'll need a lot of help. But you don't hear their stories. So Nairobi has a very great divide between those who have and those who don't. And parts of Nairobi, life goes on as normal. I think your correspondent in Nairobi might tell you that. But then these people whose lives have been completely disrupted.
Misha from South Bend, Indiana. Hello, Misha. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil. Sorry, not Neil.
Mike.
Mike.
Go ahead.
I'm a Kenyan. Actually, I'm a Luo personally, but I grew up in the Kalenjin community. It's a little town called Nandhill. One thing that I'd want to bring out about the violence in Kenya is there has been a systematic rigging that has been happening since the independence. And what happened this time around is when the elections happened, the next day is a national holiday as per the Constitution of Kenya. The people expected the results to be announced. And when the results started delaying, then it started as a protest. What you have to understand that this was not a rioting. It was not looting. This was a protest. And after the results were announced, it's not that this is not a Luo Kikuyu tribal violence. It has The Luos don't dominate the coastal area. They don't dominate the Rift Valley, the western province. And this is where all the violence has been. As a matter of fact, Nyanza province, where the Luos dwell, has been very relatively calm, except the people have been fighting with the policemen, not with the Kikuyu people. So I'd want just to have this clear that this is this is not a Luo Kikuyu thing. This is a Kenya versus the presidency. Unfortunately, the president is a Kikuyu.
Yes.
And, that is what has been happening so far.
We got it.
And
thanks.
Also, the president himself has created a mistrust that the people can't trust him anymore. Even as of right now, having appointed a government, we can't trust him to deliver. I personally went through a hardship period because of the things when he was in the cabinet of the previous regime, some of the policies that he had put into practice. And that is why people can't trust him. And that is why they protested, rioted, and then started looting.
Got it. Thank you very much for the call, Misha. So do you agree with him that this is mainly a political issue and not an ethnic issue? If the politics sorts itself out, we won't see a continuation of the violence, in your estimation, Ken?
Yes, in the urban areas, I would say it's definitely a class issue. The poor people who have no jobs, have no access to education, and want to better their lives, they feel the country is leaving them behind, and they want to change and be involved in the government. That's true. In other parts of the country, there might be old tribal tensions that go way back, tied to land issues, and that's too complicated. I would not want to pretend I'm an expert to explain in a short segment.
Which is tribal, but also colonial issues, going back to when the English ran Kenya.
Yes.
Now, before with Gwen Tompkins, we talked about Barack Obama, and obviously people running for president are going to want to seem presidential and talk to foreign leaders. But in this case, Barack Obama's family comes from Kenya. Is he well known there as a native son? Is the country very excited about his candidacy?
He is a rock star. He's a god in Kenya, Barack Obama. People, they even have a beer named Senator when he got elected Senator. And my gut feeling is if Barack Obama becomes the President of the United States, there'll be another popular beer called the President.
A beer.
Yes.
That's how you know when you've made it, when they named a beer. Reggie Jackson said, you know you made it when you named a candy bar after you, but in Kenya, it's when they named a beer after you.
Absolutely.
And do you think that Barack Obama, can his influence or American influence, outside influence, going to be the thing that solves the problem?
We need a lot of help from outside because Kenya is a key player in the region. If Kenya goes down the tubes, that's going to be a problem for southern Sudan. It's going to be a problem for Somalia. It's going to be a problem for Uganda. So we need to get Kenya right, and the U.S. is trying to get engaged, and other people are trying to get engaged.
All right, thank you. Ken Okoth, who runs a school in the Kibera slum of Nairobi. He lives outside of D.C., where he's a history teacher. Thanks so much for joining us, Ken.
Thank you.
And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.